Good afternoon. I'm going to open the hearing for the House Committee on Education, the Subcommittee on Education Innovation. Today is Thursday, April 5th, and we're almost starting on time. I want to welcome all of you today. We have participants that are in Hearing Room C, so welcome to people in Hearing Room C that I cannot see where you are. But we have a great opportunity to learn about multiple sides of education today. It's my philosophic premise that many, many people are educators, whether we realize it or not, and that in order to create the best system for all of our children, we need to look at all options and opportunities. And so today we're hearing several bills that possibly would not have been heard in the past, but I believe that I guess I have an obligation, since I have been a teacher, still am a teacher, to make sure that all of us as legislators continue to learn about our systems that are supporting our children. So we do have a large group today. I will ask people to be brief. If somebody's already made comments about what you had planned to testify, please just say, you know, your name, and I agree with that part of the testimony or what. But we have over 40 people that signed up to testify. And just so that you are aware, there is another committee that is signed up for this room right after this committee. So it is not our opportunity to go long, and unless we wanted to start again at 5 o'clock. But that would be our only option. So with that, we have two legislators that are here to get us started, and I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 2979. Okay, and I'm going to also open 2996 at the same time. Senator Starr and Representative Holley, if you want to come and share your thoughts with us. Oh, while we do that, Mr. Olson, would you give us the summary, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2979 directs parent, legal guardian, or private teacher of homeschooled child to notify the education service district each school year. It modifies the examination requirements of homeschooled children. It directs the district superintendent or designee, after issuing a notification, to issue a citation to a parent or legal guardian of a child who does not attend school and is not homeschooled. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. House Bill 2996 requires private schools to register with the Department of Education. It requires administrators and teachers employed by private schools to be licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. It requires private school employees to have a criminal records check. It imposes a civil penalty on private schools that do not register with the Department of Education. It eliminates public charter school teacher registration established by a commission. It requires administrators and teachers employed by public charter schools to be licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. It requires any person who provides instruction for compensation to children in kindergarten through grade 12 to hold a teaching license. It becomes operative on July 1st, 2010. Madam Chair, we also have a dash one amendment for House Bill 2979 that would add the grades to be tested to include grades 4, 6, and 7, include the Oregon State Assessment on the list of approved comprehensive examination, and have a clarification language on testing rather than an exact percentile. It has some language clarifying the percentile for the different testing. Madam Chair, I may also, just for the record, be helpful when people testify that they, since we're open to hearing on two bills, that they state specifically which bill they're speaking to, whether it's 2979 or 2996 or both of the bills. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Do you have a preference, Senator Starr?
Since the representative's bills, I would suggest that he would not.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm going to speak to House Bill 2979 first. I thank you for hearing House Bill 2979. As your committee administrator noted, I do have dash one amendments, and there is a one small piece of that dash one amendment that still needs an additional amendment probably. Unfortunately, didn't quite come out with everything in it. But the purpose of this bill is really to ensure that all children are getting an education and to close a loophole in the homeschooling laws that is allowing some to get around our compulsory education laws. This bill allows the parent, legal guardian, or private school teacher to homeschool a child if they notify the educational service district in writing of their intent each year. If a child has never attended public or private school, the exam should be done prior to the completion of grade 3. The 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 10th grade testing requirements mentioned in the amendment match up with the federal regulations for annual testing of school-aged children. Additionally, the bill also requires the child be tested the first time within 30 days of notifying the education service district if the child is homeschooled after grade 3. According to my suggested amendment, the performance standard testing should show results that are equivalent to the performance score on the Oregon State assessment for the child's grade level that would place the child in the category of performance scores that nearly meet academic content standards. If this level is not achieved, then the trigger of an additional examination within 1 year of the date of the first examination would occur. If the child does not achieve the nearly meet standards on the second examination, the superintendent of the education service district will then direct the parent, and this is where the dash one amendment is not quite accurate. The intent was that the parent would then send the child and have a meeting with the ESD, the superintendent of the education service district, to come up with an alternative education plan to help that child meet the nearly meets standards. So that's the part of the bill that didn't quite get right in the amendment. Parents of children with disabilities who have an individual education plan are receiving a specialized education and related services through the school district would be evaluated for satisfactory educational progress according to the recommendations of their plan. The bill also allows the superintendent or designee, after issuing notification, to issue a citation to the parent or legal guardian of the child who does not attend school and who is not homeschooled. Truancy laws still exist in Oregon. Also, as a matter of interest, the Oregon State Athletic Association regulations for athletic eligibility mirror these same requirements. Students must pass the majority of their classes in high school to participate in the high school athletics. For example, if a student is not passing a majority of their classes, they may not withdraw from school and continue to compete as a homeschooled student. And many have asked me why this bill, and I'm just going to describe to you. I've had two cases that have happened in my district where children have been, I become aware of through complaints, that we're not getting an education. We're not registered as homeschoolers. And upon going to the ESD and to the school superintendent, the solution to that, this child happened to be at about grade 6 level, had never been in a school before, had never been registered as homeschool. At that point, the ESD registered the child as a homeschool person, and the compulsory education laws were basically overlooked. And to my surprise, they entered that child in according to his age at sixth grade level and was not going to be required to be tested yet for another 3 years. So, you know, that is kind of alarming to me that we have a system that allows truancy, actually. And, you know, our compulsory education laws are designed to make sure that children get an education. Now, I'm not here to say that, you know, homeschool children, as a majority and as a general rule, don't receive a great education. I know that a lot of them do. They are stellar students. That's really not my issue. My issue is basically the unschooled. And, you know, our laws are set up as such to really protect children that are in, because they don't have the ability to fight for themselves to get an education. They haven't learned, and they're not of age, and they really need laws to protect their rights and their right to an education. So I've proposed this, and I've had the Department of Education look at it, and I'm sure they can answer. I believe there's someone here that could probably answer some of the specifics and the technicalities that are involved in this bill. I've spent a couple of years looking at this problem, trying to figure out how to address truancy in our state, and frankly, the way our homeschool laws are, there's no accountability to the Department of Education of whether a student passes at a certain level. We just don't have that data. We don't have that information, and there's no accountability to the children, basically, on the type of education they're getting. This bill isn't trying to dictate the curriculum. It's not trying to dictate how they receive their education. It's just trying to ensure that children are nearly meeting, that's the definition, I guess, that's used for each grade level, the standard. And that's really the crux of this bill. And if you wish, I will move on to the other bill, if you want me now, or do you want questions on that?
Well, I'd rather have Senator Starr give his presentation first.
Okay. I didn't know he was supporting the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr. I'm State Senator from District 15, representing Western Washington County. I'm actually here specifying opposition to the bill, strong opposition, quite honestly. And I appreciate really the opportunity to have this discussion. It's one I think that is important for the legislature to continue to have, and it's one that, quite honestly, we have had in this building for a long time. And as the reality is that legislators come and go. And so it's important to kind of refresh the record about what has happened in this legislative building process over the last 20 years or so, probably maybe even longer than that. What we have, Madam Chair, is and members of the committee in Oregon, is a long history of regulating homeschoolers, homeschool families, and their parents. It goes back to the 80s, where homeschoolers were required to test every year, required to report to local districts, always under the threat of being remanded to the public school system. It was a process to, at least at a certain level, that the homeschool community at least a certain number of them almost volunteered to enter into this kind of regulatory environment. And what we saw over those number of years, where we had a lot of information that was being generated from the homeschool community, their parents, the kids, was a record of incredible success, where homeschoolers in Oregon have just done a tremendously excellent job. And there's people that are going to testify behind me that will provide a lot of data, a lot of information, as it relates to the kind of record that homeschoolers and their families have generated in Oregon. There's national data as well. But what we come to is there was a process in the late 90s to relax some of those regulations, because the homeschool families had demonstrated the fact that they were exceeding their peers that were either attending private or public schools. And so there was a move to relax some of the regulation. And in 1999, we actually spearheaded through the Oregon House of Representatives a bill that freed homeschoolers completely of regulation, of annual testing, and of their whole reporting requirements. At the time, Governor Kitzhaber, obviously was the governor, was not necessarily supportive of the bill as to the full extent that the bill as it passed the House. But once it passed the House, and it passed with a strong bipartisan vote, I mean, Republicans and Democrats alike voted to support this bill. Again, and it was because we had so much good data, and the stories that we had, both anecdotal and real data, was just tremendous. So we moved the bill to the Senate, and at that point, the governor, seeing that there was a pretty strong momentum, we sat down at the table with the governor's education advisor at the time, Danny Santos, Jim Green from OSBA, myself, and members from the homeschool community. And we worked out a compromise, and the compromise is really what's in the law today. It's where we test at grades 3, 5, 8, and 10. It is an opportunity for there to be markers laid down, where we don't hopefully lose the kids through the cracks. The example that Representative Holvey mentioned, you know, those are cases that need to be dealt with. And I think, again, you'll hear from folks behind us that will talk to the truancy issues. Nobody in this room wants a child to grow up in Oregon without a proper education. And so we need to deal with those on an individual basis. But let's not penalize the thousands of Oregon children that are being educated by their parents. I don't know how to get this across to you, because I'm passionate about this, because if you're a mom and a dad, and you're willing to dedicate basically your life, and you know, you already, to a certain extent, all parents do that, but parents that will pour into their life, their kids' lives on a daily basis in a one-on-one or one-on-two or however many kids they have that they're working with, how great is that? How awesome is that? That we have parents that are willing to sacrifice. That's a sacrifice. I mean, these parents could be out, you know, doing other things, making a living or whatever, but instead they choose to invest their precious time into those precious kids. And the results speak for themselves. So I would urge you to do not move this bill forward. Let's deal with the issues that Representative Holvey has identified. I think there's ways that we can do that. But let's not throw out kind of the thousands of unbelievably great examples that we have of parents that are doing a tremendous job with their kids. It comes down to a certain level, and there's a number of folks in the room. Some of them have very strong religious beliefs, the reasons that they homeschool. Some of them don't homeschool because of religious beliefs, but just because they care about their kids and they believe that personal one-on-one or that individual attention that their kids will receive is the best thing for their child. So, and one last thing before I close. In 2003, we actually passed, again, we passed a homeschool bill through the legislature on a strong bipartisan vote. The Senate at that point was a tied Senate, 15-15. And that bill basically freed homeschoolers again from these testing reporting requirements completely. I mean, completely freed them. Homeschool parents, you're free to go and do the good work that you're doing. Basically a real tiny bit of accountability at the front end. That bill was vetoed by Governor Kulongowski, and when he vetoed the bill, he cited the compromise that we crafted with Governor Kitzhaber in '99. So I think that there's a number of folks in this hearing room that are homeschooled families that would prefer to see, quite honestly, a public hearing and action on House Bill 2629, which is again a bipartisan supported sponsored bill that would move us in the direction that we moved in 2003, rather than what I would consider a step backwards as it relates to homeschool education in Oregon is House Bill 2979. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to put these comments on the record. As I mentioned, I'm supposed to be in another hearing, and so I need to maybe excuse myself and do that. So again, thank you very much. I appreciate the hearing because education is good, and education not only of kids out there, but of legislators who haven't maybe walked through this process over the last number of years.
If you just have one moment, Senator Starr, Representative Minnis has a question.
Thank you for coming. You've been involved in this discussion for many years, as you've stated, and I know you've been involved in a lot of discussions and you've seen data. In your experience, how do these kids test as it relates to public school kids?
Representative Minnis, I don't have specifics in front of me in the file. I'm sure that you will get specifics from folks that are sitting behind me, but the reality is that they score higher than their peers, whether they're in private school or whether they're in public school. How much higher, you know, you can look, they'll provide you the data. But it shouldn't surprise us, quite honestly. Because when you talk about class size, you're talking about one-on-one, one-on-two, you know, one-on however many children there are in the family. And that's personal attention. And you can't substitute that. And the last thing that this legislature should do is discourage that.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
If I can just go on the record as well, on the other bill, I oppose the other bill as well, and I won't go into the details. Again, you're going to hear a lot of folks that that will testify and reasons why I don't believe that House Bill 2996 is a positive direction for Oregon as well. So,
okay. Well, thank you, Senator Starr.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
And I hope everybody noticed his example of how to say it and say it quick and get your point across. Representative Holvey, if you wanted to speak on 2996.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and just a brief comment on 2979, if I might. I did just receive the -2 amendment to clarify the one error in the First Amendment, but I don't have enough copies at this point. So I will get those to your committee administrator as soon as I can. And to respond just briefly,
can I say so noted on the previous comment?
So noted. Okay. On 2979, its intent is not to throw out homeschooler and their achievements. The current law only requires a 15th percentile. My issue is really with kids that aren't getting that great education in the homeschool system, that they're because we have no data on that, because the test results of homeschool children are not reported to the Department of Education. So we have no way of knowing, whether the statistics are real or not real. And so, I'm not doubting that a majority of homeschool children do extremely well. I know some myself. And so, but my concern is the ones that are out there that aren't getting an education, or that are getting an education that is well below the standards they'll need to survive in the world. And thank you for indulging me to say that. But House Bill 2996 is another bill, and the intent of this bill is to provide the same measure of protection for children in private schools as is provided to children who attend public schools by requiring private schools to register and to require their teachers to be licensed. Teacher certification is a way to maintain and improve performance in the education profession and provides a way to take disciplinary action when teachers commit crimes or violate standards for competency or unethical performance. And again, I would note that private schools, as a majority, do a great job. That some of the best schools we have in this state are private schools. I'm not here to dispute that. But the state doesn't even know how many private schools we have in this state. They're not required to be registered. There's lots of them out there. We have no data on it whatsoever. It's just troubling to me that we aren't having criminal background checks on people out there that are in the business of teaching children. They're not licensed. They're not registered with the state. We register and license landscapers. We register and license a lot of different types of businesses in the state to protect consumers. And child care providers are required to have educational requirements, and they're required to be licensed as well. And so I think this bill is just simply asking that we register the schools that are in this state that are teaching children, because they're in a business for doing that. And I think we should have standards for teachers as well that are teaching, and have criminal background checks. I'm extremely worried about scenarios that are out there with schools that we don't even know exist, with individuals that are teaching children that we have no idea of their background and what's going on in those schools. It, again, this bill doesn't direct what kind of curriculum is going to be taught. It doesn't tell people, anything about their religion, their philosophy. It just simply asks for licensing, and it asks for teacher certification according to the Teacher Standards Practices Act. I've handed you my written testimony, and I'm not going to go through and read the whole thing, but this bill, it does not include teachers, or does not include school nurses, tutors, violin instructors, the Tillamook Forestry Center interpreters, or Portland Community Music Centers. Obviously, I've gotten a couple of emails, or staff, or the Portland Zoo education specialists. I mean, those are clearly not what the intent of this bill is. And if you look into who's required to be licensed according to the standard teacher standard practices act, you'll find that there's plenty of exclusions and ways to deal with those sorts of people that are educating our children in specific areas on specific topics. So this bill just basically asks for an accountability of the private school system to the state to make sure we can ensure children's safety. That's really the intent of this bill. And, you know, with the way things are in today's world, I think this is not asking too much. I think that all the legitimate private schools in this state can meet all of these standards. And most of the teachers, I believe, can probably meet the certification. And that's essentially it.
Thank you, Representative Holby. Questions? Representative Buckley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Holby, again, just to kind of do a nutshell on 2979, your main intent is to make sure that there are no children that fall through the cracks, so that somehow there's an accountability or communication that happens that's clear and understood. Is that correct?
That is basically correct. I want to make sure that the children have a right to an education in our country. They have a I believe they have that right, and you know we have to measure that somehow. And to say that you know they meet the 15th percentile, and you know I'm not sure that guarantees they are getting a good education. You know, quite frankly, and on the other hand, when we don't even have the ability to have the test results turned into the state to see how they're scoring. You know, there is no accountability in that system, and frankly, you know, the as I described in the situations I've run into with the homeschool laws being used to basically allow truancy in this state, and I don't believe the Department of Education or ESDs have the ability really to do anything about it with the way the laws are structured right now. And I think perhaps the Department of Education, I know they're not promoting this bill or supporting it or opposing it, but they could answer some of the details about that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Holby. Appreciate you bringing your thoughts and providing the committee with what I would share is there are gaps in every system. And what I hear you say is exactly what Representative Buckley said, is that you want to make sure that not any student or any child in Oregon goes uneducated. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I really appreciate you allowing me to bring these thoughts forward. And again, I have no axe to grind with any private education or any homeschoolers. I really think they do a stellar job. It's just that I'm very concerned about the way the system is set up, that there's children out there falling through the cracks, and I've identified some in my district and have been unable to help them.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Menes.
Representative Holby, if there is a different way that we could identify those children that needed directed some other direction, do something different, would you be open to having that discussion and seeing perhaps rather than penalize the whole world, seeing if we can do a narrow focus on kids that are not being educated or they're using, if it's a truancy problem, would you be open to looking at how we can do that rather than having such a broad concept, but doing something more narrowly defined that can go after that?
Yeah, certainly, Representative, Madam Chair, Representative Menes, I'd certainly be open to that discussion. You know, as far as the homeschool testing one, though, I really spent a lot of time looking at that, and I don't, you know, for the most part, I don't think that these are any great barriers for homeschoolers to achieve at all. And they're set extremely low right now, and I think that the intent of this bill is not to put any great hurdles for people to jump over, but just really to have some accountability that kids are getting an education. But I'm open to that discussion for sure of finding another way if, in fact, we can get there.
Thank you.
And on the other bill to make sure that, you know, we have some way of making sure children are safe in their environments when they're getting an education.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Yes. And just so that I forgot to mention this, when I call different presenters' names, they might be in the other hearing room. So if you hear your name, please come out of hearing room C and come on over. So I appreciate that. With that, we have Representative Donna Nelson, and I'd like to call Mark Siegel to the testimony stand at this time. Yes, Representative Nelson and Mark. Now, I've got this. I got to share this with everybody, and Representative Nelson will appreciate this, because every time when I served on her committee last year, if somebody said an acronym, you had to pay a fine.
That's true.
I've got this little timer.
Okay. If you go over it?
If you go over 2 minutes, you know, the state school fund would appreciate your contribution.
I better get Obi down here to talk for me.
Well, does it ding?
No, it doesn't
ding, but...
You put it up on top, they can see the fire.
Oh, well, but I'd appreciate cool. you if you would just summarize your testimony rather than read it and be brief as possible, but get, you know, share your main points because we want to hear those.
Thank you, Chair Comp, and distinguished members of the House Subcommittee on Education and Innovation.
And Representative, please say which bill you're speaking to.
Donna Nelson from House District 24, here to testify against House Bill 2996.
Thank you.
I thank you for the opportunity to voice my concerns regarding House Bill 2996. This bill would require all private school teachers in Oregon to undergo licensing identical to public school teachers. In effect, this would make all private school teachers conform to the same mold as public schools. Such a proposal is contrary to the public's interest in having the power to choose alternative forms of education for religious or other purposes. It's also unconstitutional. Back in the 1920s, during an unfortunately dark period in Oregon's history, racist special interest groups had control over many state agencies. These groups ensured their causes passed by referendum and their chosen candidate became our governor. It's truly an embarrassment to our state. As a result of these racist policies, Oregon passed a law outlawing private schools. That law was held unconstitutional in the landmark case of Pierce versus Society Sisters in 1925. As Justice McReynolds stated, the fundamental theory of liberty upon which all governments in this union repose exudes any general power of the state to standardize its children by forcing them to accept instruction from public teachers only. The child is not the mere creature of the state. Those who nurture him and direct his destiny have the right, coupled with a high duty, to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations. Even though House Bill 2996 does not outlaw private schools, it would nonetheless force children to accept instruction from only state-approved and state-regulated teachers. I do not believe House Bill 2996 would pass the test of Pierce. Chair Comp, distinguished committee members, I urge you to stop this legislation so our courts won't have to. Thank you.
Thank you. 2 minutes, 30 seconds.
Oh, pretty good.
Pretty darn good.
If there are not any questions, Chair Comp, I'm going to excuse myself.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
Because we have an expert sitting right next to you. Mr. Siegel?
Yes. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Mark Siegel. I represent the Oregon Federation of Independent Schools. I've been at this a long time volunteering as its executive director and president. I'm here today to give you a little bit of background on the current state of private school registration. I thought it might be useful. In 1975, legislation was passed that provided for private school registration. And when schools were registered on a voluntary basis, then teachers who had teaching certificates could maintain those, which wasn't the case at that point. So we could have teachers more readily move into the private sector and maintain their certificate, because teachers, as students, move in and out of the public and private system. The legislation in 1975 created a private school advisory committee to the State Board of Education, and it adopted a set of minimum criterion for those schools so that they could know what they had to do to qualify for this registration. And you will find that now many hundreds of schools voluntarily register with the state. This is the minimum requirement for them to have the privilege of fingerprinting their employees. And this is a system that we really enjoy. Since 1975, it's worked very well. We have a great relationship with the Department of Education, the teacher standards and practices, and we've worked very hard to make clear that we are fighting for the right of parents to have a wide range of options in the education of their children. And that, I guess, is the essence of what I want to tell you. We have a system that really works today. I won't repeat what I've written to you, but I would point out that attached on page 3 and 4 are the Governor's Proclamation of Private School Appreciation Day, which we celebrated here in the Capitol on February 1st. And he made the point that the strength of Oregon private schools is rooted in the democratic ideal of freedom of choice, which we represent. And then the Board of Education, on page 4, you'll see they adopted a resolution in support and recognized and endorsed the Governor's Proclamation, and indicates its support and appreciation for the private schools. I'm very afraid of this legislation because it will serve. Representative Holvey mentioned the fact that he wasn't going to exclude certain teachers, that the legislation wouldn't do what we were concerned about. But I would direct you to page 4, line 11, in all bold: any person who provides instruction for compensation to a child who is in kindergarten through grade 12 is required to hold a teaching license issued by the commission. That seems very broad and very scary to us, to be honest. Now, we are not opposed in any way to state certification of teachers. We think it's wonderful. Many of our schools have that as a requirement or have that as a high mix in their schools. But many of our schools look to people with different skills and abilities, and that's what makes a private school a private school. And so we're not fighting certification, but we're saying to mandate that for all our schools would literally put some of our schools out of business. Because, to step parenthetically, Bill Gates has offered money to schools to change radically. And I know my McMinnville school, high school, went for that, and I worked with our community to get that. One of the things he required was you make the school small and you give the school complete autonomy for hiring. And we were competing for those funds, and we made it as finalists. And that's indicative to me that there's nothing the matter with state certification, but having the autonomy within a school to choose those teachers in that mix that do the right job for those children is what's important. And so it's that fight that we fought in 1922 that resulted in the Pierce case, which has been a bedrock of American education law, as you probably know. I was invited in 2000 by the U.S. Department of Education to celebrate the Pierce case. Not that a bad law had been passed, but since that time, the legacy of a contribution by the private school community, and that law has set a precedent, knowing that children are not mere creatures of the state, and that they don't have to accept instruction from public teachers only. And rather than go into all the points I had prepared for today, I guess I would point out the fact that if parents are concerned about state certification, they can keep their children in the public schools or choose private schools that have that. But in some cases, they're finding those systems aren't meeting their needs. They're leaving their money behind, and they're walking their feet, and they're saying, we need something different for our children. And they examine pretty ruthlessly as consumers because they're going out of pocket again and leaving their monies behind. This isn't an easy decision for them. And they do that. They do that in numbers. We represent more than 10% of the children in schools here in Oregon. As I said, the vast majority are registered. We take advantage of the fingerprinting and other things that we can. We have never raised an objection, a single objection to a health, fire, or safety regulation. We welcome those. We understand the duties and responsibilities that we have. And rather than go into all the points, there's a lot of us here today who are quite concerned because I've been at this for 33 years, and I'd like to keep my job. I wouldn't have it. It just wouldn't happen, and those of us that have been at it long enough wouldn't stop to go get certified. And so I'm open to questions, and I thank you for considering our concerns.
Well, Thank you, Mr. Siegel. If the committee would allow, we have at least 8 or so more people to testify on. Oh, it's a lot more than that. Well, anyway, if we could have Mr. Siegel come back, he is more of an expert in the field when we have questions. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Can you stay?
Absolutely. I have nothing better to do.
Okay. Or thank you. Well, I'm going to ask my staff to help keep track of who's been called and who hasn't, and we'll do it in panels of 3.
Yes. So when I call your name, you can please come up to the to the witness table. If you're in hearing room C, just come on over. And then just a reminder to emphasize if you're speaking for one bill or both bills. And Shannon Vilmette, Roger William, and Brian Ray. Thank you.
And we're just taking you in the order in which you signed up. Where do we take up? To the committee assistant. She'll help you out.
Madam Chair, just as a reminder to witnesses, if they could start by please stating their name and if they're with a representative organization, their organization, before they testify. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Shannon, if you'd start.
I am Shannon Vilmette, and I'm a mom. And I've never done this before, so it's a little bit terrifying. And I know that we're all interested in the same goal, and I don't question the intent of the person who has put this bill forward. And I thank you for listening to me. One of my major concerns stems from he said that he doesn't intend to tell homeschool parents or private schools how to teach children, and yet requiring all instructors to be licensed teachers certainly does. You said yourself that we're all teachers, and yet we're certainly not all certified. And the homeschool community draws extensively on, I've had engineers come and talk to our children about why math is important in their school. We get together and we make up for each other's weaknesses, teaching each other's children with our strengths. I've personally taught a writing class in my home, and yet I'm not a certified teacher. To imply that because I'm not certified that I'm less qualified, my children score, I have 4 children. My older children have always scored above the 90th percentile in every category, and typically the 99th. They've gone to state for geography competitions, history competitions, and writing competitions, and I would have entered them in math and spelling, but they're not available in Washington County. My children all read before the age of 5, although I admit that's slowly sounding out words, but by the age of 6, they all read fluently. Adult Bibles, not children's books. He said that it wouldn't affect local museums and aquariums and history organizations, yet I know that our homeschool co-ops will pay money to people from those organizations to come teach our groups, and it scares me that there's not really a clear line to say that that doesn't count. We've had scientists, nurses, we've had poetry classes. I'm not sure what is instructing a teacher and what's not, where the licenses would be required. I'm trying to go quick. Anyway, I know, and I'm not trying to throw stones or anything, but I guess I really have a hard time seeing what does that have to do with truancy in the first place? How would that requirement help children in any way? The cynical side of me, which I try to avoid, really has trouble seeing that that's not a teacher union trying to get a monopoly on education, because there are so many rich educational opportunities that would be taken away by requiring that. People who are, they might not be teachers, but they're experts in their field of knowledge, and they can share that with kids. I'm also concerned about how these bills might affect children with learning disabilities, and I know there are exceptions for children with extreme disabilities. For instance, if a child had Down syndrome, they might be accepted. But there are many children who have slight learning disabilities. I mean, the public schools are, they have lots of kids who are under the 15th percentile, probably about 15%. And so to imply that a homeschooled child who's under the 15th percentile, which he actually stated was not getting a good education, I got to say, you know, right back at you a little bit. There are children, and I don't happen to have those children. My children learn very easily. But I know children who struggle to learn and whose parents, they research, they work with teachers, they work with every possible scenario to find the best way to teach those children. And to say that because they didn't score above a certain percentile, two tests in a row, that they would automatically be forced to go to public schools is wrong. And so that concerns me. But even eliminating learning disabled children from the discussion and just addressing concerns over poor academic quality, I didn't bring all the statistics, but I've seen them in deciding whether to homeschool or not, and homeschool and public school students completely outscore public school students. And he said that we don't have to report our scores, but I have my children tested every single year, and I would be happy to share those tests with you and all of the parents I know. And he said that, you know, some of those requirements are not a burden on homeschool families, but I can tell you as a mother of four, it costs me several hundred dollars to have every one of my kids tested. And when you're talking about four children, that's a burden. And for our family, we happen to be very blessed. We would cut whatever had to be done to make it happen. But there are families who are already cutting all kinds of luxuries in order to just buy the curriculum to educate their kids and to add another expense on them when the state isn't providing any funding to pay for those. It, again, it's wrong. And to say that public schools, which are scoring less, that homeschool or private school students would be forced to go to public schools, which score lower on the tests, I just really don't see the logic in that. It's a common sense thing. My greatest concern, however, is that I think the reporting requirements, the testing requirements, everything about this says that we're trying to shift responsibility for parenting and raising and educating kids from parents to the government. And every teacher I know confirms that a student's success in school is directly linked to their parents' involvement. And I don't know why we would send this message. If you've got parents, and believe me, homeschooling is not easy. The time and the money and the effort, it's very difficult. And I don't know why we would put hurdles in those parents' way. And I just can't tell you, day and night, I sleep and dream and trying to get my children the best education possible. And I think, if anything, our resources would be better used encouraging more parents to be that way rather than have the government take that role. And my final concern is that the whole focus on testing overlooks the fact that parents often choose homeschooling for reasons in addition to academics. I know safety issues, spiritual reasons, diversity in learning experiences based on their children's giftedness, social needs, family reasons. To force public school education based on test scores alone negates the importance of these other factors, and they do matter. And I, as a parent, feel that I have the right to protect my children from some of the sexual pressures, the bullying, profanity, mocking of their spiritual beliefs that exist in public schools. And above all, one thing that I really enjoy is my children, even though they're junior high age, feel free to be kids. They feel free to play Legos and not think that they're not cool. They feel free to not worry about dating and whether they have a boyfriend or not. They run and play and have fun. And all of that matters to me just as much as academics. So in closing, my concerns don't just stem from an inability to meet these requirements, but I truly believe that they're wrong and they're harmful. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Representative Roblin.
Thank you. Question. As a public high school principal, I had a lot of people who I knew that homeschooled that I appreciated a whole lot because they were outstanding individual educators in their own right. They worked very hard with our kids, and they did a great deal. And a number of them came to me at different times to tell me that there were certain homeschool people who shouldn't be homeschooling their children because they were afraid of what was happening to those kids. I'm just going to tell you that, and I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, but there are these groups of homeschoolers who work very closely together, and they have a real passion about what they're doing, and for all the right reasons, in my opinion, all the right reasons. But there were some who were doing it for a lot of wrong reasons. And how do we help get at that? Because I will tell you that the way I found out most of those that we went and talked to the ESD and did things with were from other homeschool parents. I mean, they feel the same way. I mean, so how do we go about making sure that those other kids are being treated fairly and safe?
I guess the best way I could answer that is if I talk to teachers or anyone in any profession, I have a feeling that you will find when they're not at the school that they feel that there are other teachers, that they don't agree with their methods of teaching, that they don't, they would do it differently. And there are certainly homeschool families who do it very differently from me. I have a pretty rigid and structured personality, and I know many homeschools who are schoolers through the other extreme. But when I get to know their children and spend time with them, I mean this in all sincerity, I have never met there are people who call themselves unschoolers, but even they educate their children, just not in the same structured method. I have never met parents, and homeschooling's a lot of work, and I can't imagine a parent purposefully keeping their kids home and having to take care of them if they didn't care to educate them. It just, I don't quite see, I've never seen it happen, I guess is all I'm saying.
Okay. Representative Dahlem, and I'm going to ask you to make it short.
One question for you. A long time ago, I had opportunity to advise a governor, and I remember him going out on the steps of the state capitol and saying that we should embrace homeschoolers. We should embrace them because if they succeed, they can teach us. And if they fail, we want them to feel welcome when they come back. So I'm going to ask you, how, in your opinion, can we embrace homeschoolers and private schoolers?
And I think the best way is to not put hurdles in our way. And I'm not anti-public school. That's the one thing I want is for my kids to be around all sorts of other kids, to learn to appreciate people from different backgrounds. But I do experience, especially if people don't know that I'm a homeschooler and the subject comes up and they're teachers, a lot of, I think, strange hidden biases where they assume we're all in bomb shelters, you know, packing ammo and not, you know, not really teaching our kids. And that's not who we are. We want to train our kids. And it's not that we can't meet these requirements. It's that why would you put all of these hurdles and paperwork in our way? And
Thank you. Mr. William?
Williams. Thank you. I'm Roger Williams. I'm a legislative coordinator for Ocean Network, a statewide homeschooling organization. At the end, Madam Chair, may I respond to Representative Roblin's question? I'm going to talk about 2979. The bill, Representative Holvey, talked about the 15th percentile as being low. While the number 15 sounds low, the fact is that one out of seven people in the general population would flunk this standard. That's the definition of the 15th percentile. Count off the people in this room by sevens. Every seventh person would fail this test. The second, I just want you to know, 15th is not really low. The bill deprives those students who are naturally on the low end of the education spectrum of the opportunity to be homeschooled. The assumption is that they would be better served in a public school when there's absolutely no evidence that these children as a group would do better in the public schools. In fact, the bottom 15% of home-educated students score slightly better on standardized tests than the bottom 15% of public school students. Only 13.26% of home-educated students scored below the 15th percentile. On the back here, I've given the state statistics for that. And this is from the previous year. This is the latest was from 99. And by the way, it's possible for the state to collect the standardized tests. They just don't do it. They are turned in. The ESDs see the scores, and there's a breakdown between that and going to the state. So we don't need to. The parents are turning them in. It's not the parents' fault. The parents don't need to be cracked down on.
Mr. Williams, could you walk through that process a little bit? Where do they turn the tests in?
Sure. When my children are tested, I live in Multnomah County, which requires all homeschoolers to turn in their tests. And so we send it into the ESD. They file it away. They used to report those to the state. Even though there's not 100% collected, there's still enough to do a huge statistical sample to tell the legislature what the scores are. I mean, it must be like 70-80% that actually get turned in. That's enough.
Okay. Thank you.
This shows the Dr. Ray here will go into this more detail on a national level, I'm sure. But this shows these are the scores, the top the 99th to 91st to 99th percentile, all the way down to the first through 15th percentile. How many homeschool students scored in it? If they were, it should be straight across. 50th percentile is normal. That would be where the L should be. You'll notice homeschoolers, I'm sorry, I'm nervous here. A lot of homeschoolers score high, very few homeschoolers score low. And this bump up here is actually because there should be more in this because this is 15, width of 15 rather 15th percentiles rather than 10 percentiles. So that's why that bumps up. The theme of HB 2979 is that home schools can fail to provide a good education, so they need to be controlled by the state of Oregon. In point of fact, though, it is precisely the freedom to educate individually and innovatively without government interference which produces such outstanding results in home schools, and private schools for that matter. State control of quality is only a recipe to damage the education of the many students who thrive under the freedom for parents to teach what is best for their students. Madam Chair,
yes.
And your question was, what about those parents who are acting negligently? Actually, I believe Amy Grant of Oregon Home Education Network is going to talk about that, and please make sure that she gets a chance. But the short answer is. And it was interesting that you said other homeschoolers rat on these parents. Grandma will rat on these parents because Grandma cares more about her grandchildren than you, Representative Roblin, or you, Representative Kopp, or you, Representative Miss. Grandma counts.
I am a grandma.
you know.
Her grandson was here yesterday.
So they will be turned. Sure, there's going to be the guy who never sees anybody. You know, he's a. And we've been accused of all those marijuana growers who want to keep their kids out of the schools. I'm sure there are one or two of those in Oregon. But the point is, you don't want to penalize us because of them. And I appreciate a representative's question to Representative Holvey. If there was a different way of identifying these less than stellar parents, if he would be interested in that. And that is the way to go. That is the way to go.
Thank you. Dr. Ray?
Yes, my name is Brian Ray. I live in Salem, Oregon. Just very briefly, I have been a certified classroom teacher in public schools and private schools in Salem and in Washington State. I have a PhD in science education from Oregon State University. I've supervised teachers in public schools and I've been a professor at the undergraduate and graduate level, teaching teachers, teaching philosophy of education, teaching science education, statistics and probability, and those kinds of things. First of all, there's a clear research case for why anybody and everybody should oppose 2979. I'm going to talk mostly about 2979 and a quick comment on 2996, by the way. First of all, study after study after study done by many people. I've done more studies than anybody on homeschooling in the nation. Homeschool kids, the 15th to 30 percentile points higher than the public school average on average. Oregon homeschool children are no different. On average, they're far above the national average. They're far above the Oregon average. It's just incontrovertible at this point. That's what we find in research over and over again. The research on the social, emotional, psychological development tells us basically the same thing. The homeschooled children are doing, on average, as well and typically better than those in public schools. And finally, the big question that people kept asking is, well, all right, you know, achievement, and yeah, well, okay, social, emotional development, what about the real world of adulthood? Well, guess what? There's no research on that, and they're doing as well or better than those who come from public and private schools, both in terms of what percent go to college, what percent finish college at an early rate. Civic engagement is higher amongst home-educated graduates than public school graduates. Community service is higher amongst homeschool graduates than public school graduates. Now, this is not a criticism of public schools, okay? It's just facts of what the research shows us. It's just the opposite of what many people were predicting for 25 years when we had a renewal of home education. Most of you know it's not a new thing. It's an old, millennia-old proposition. Secondly, there's no correlation between state-controlled homeschooling throughout the 50 states and homeschool children's academic achievement. Like, that's a big thing to get right now. I've done that research. Others have done that research. I am in the process of a new study with Dr. Bruce Eagleson, and preliminary results, no correlation between state-controlled homeschooling and SAT scores, as in going on to college scores. And it's a fact. If you do not have even a correlation, then you cannot get into cause and effect. In other words, there's absolutely no empirical evidence that the state controlling homeschooling more will somehow improve the learning. It's just how research works. It's how logic works. There has to at least be a correlation. Anecdotes, as fun as they are, we all like them because we like to hear about the winner in the spelling bee, and we don't want to hear about the family that's not doing a good job. Anecdotes do not make a good basis for law.
If you can next, just say your
my main point.
Yep.
My main point. I'll do the main points real fast. Major principles from the American Education Research Association, American Psychological Association, tell us the current law and the proposed law are bad, bad use of test scores. And I could go into that if you want me to. This bill also implies that state-run public schooling somehow with certified teachers will guarantee that a child, if he's doing poorly, will do better there than in homeschooling. There is no evidence of that. Probabilistically speaking, if you take a child that's going to 14th percentile homeschooling, put him in an institutional school like a public school, he'll do even worse. It's just the way it happens. It's the way it works. Again, there are a lot of reasons for this. It also has the marks, I'm sorry to say, of vested interests, but that's my experience around the nation testifying in many legislatures. And finally, on this bill, if there is truly a concern for all children everywhere, then every child who scores below the 15th percentile in public school for two or more years should be forced by the state to be homeschooled or private schooled. And I believe that fact that typically people propose these kinds of bills, never propose that kind of bill, tells me something about the seriousness and the integrity of the intention. Because if, in fact, children are, quote, failing, and as Mr. Williams pointed out, at least 15% of public schools students are below 15th percentile, we must find a way to coerce them or compel them by state power into private schooling or homeschooling. So I think you can see that this bill is a bad idea. Quickly on the second bill, I forget the number. Somebody help me. 2996. I thought it was excellent how you were given a quick history of Pierce versus Society of Sisters, 1925 Supreme Court case. Trying to control private schools in Oregon would be a tsunami shift philosophically and politically, completely antithetical to what we hold to be important in the land of the free and the home of the brave in the United States of America and in Oregon. It's incredible to me that somebody in the year 2007 is proposing state control of privately run education. And as an educator, classroom teacher, professor of education, philosophy of education teacher, I can tell you it would be clear whether you're a neo-Marxist, a right-wing fundamentalist evangelical, a fundamentalist Muslim. Philosophers of education understand that the control of certification does de facto and ipso facto control in many ways both the processes and the content of curriculum in schools, and they require private schools to have state government certified teachers is antithetical to the freedom that we cherish in America. That's it.
Thank you. Okay. As a chairperson, I have a little dilemma because we need to start our last bill by about 2:30. And now all of you know how to calculate because we've been hearing lots of figures. That means we have 20 people to testify in 20 minutes. Well, possibly more. But so what I'm going to do, and if I'm out of order, somebody please tell me.
Your committee.
I'm going to ask people just to come before us and say whether you oppose or support the bill with the bill number with your name in one sentence. One sentence. Because I know you've come a long ways, but I want to respect everybody's voice in this in these two rooms.
Madam Chair, Representative Roland, just want to note that everyone is welcome to turn in written testimony, which committee members will have for consultation.
Yes. Thank you so much. So we'll have the next three people come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dennis Turry, Kevin Sturett, and Lori Simpson, please.
While you're being seated, if you'd say the next three names so they know if they're in the other room.
Larry Hall, Brian Dutton, and Brad Gray, please.
Thank you. Appreciate your patience.
Shall I start? I think this is the first call.
Yes, if you're the first person.
Yeah, my name is Dennis Turry. I'm the executive director of the Parents Education Association. I'm Charity's father, who's a 15-year-old in a private, unregistered school. And I'm the father of four other children that we homeschooled. I'm also the man that got us into this mess in 1985 by beginning the passage of the 1985 homeschool bill. And one of the points on my bulleted points on my handout is, do you really want to open this can of worms again, by which I refer to the testing requirement? And you begin to get a little bit of a sense of that today. But let me quickly address two things that Representative Hulvey said in his presentation.
About one or two sentences then.
Very good. First of all, his concern, the anecdotal evidence that he gave, did not concern some failure of the law. It concerned the failure of an ESD representative to prosecute truancy charges against someone that Representative Hulvey said they knew wasn't educating the child. So if you think you're going to get against come against truancy with this bill, how, if you don't have the will now to go after the sort of people that Representative Hulvey said drove this bill who didn't educate their child? So, you know, and then secondly, Representative Hulvey said three times, I hope you heard it, that we have a compulsory education law in this state. We do not. We have a compulsory attendance law. You don't claim to be able to produce kids scoring at a particular percentage. And that's why the homeschool bill is the way it is right now. Parents are required to have their children in attendance for the same period of time, same subjects as the public school, and that really is all you can require of them because that's all you require of your own kids. I also oppose, I oppose 2979.
I'm sorry.
Can I do 2996 real fast?
One sentence.
Okay. I completely oppose 2996. Couldn't agree more with Brian. And I just would encourage you to read my bulleted points.
I think
that this Committee on Educational Innovation, what you should be doing is looking at not trying to certify the people who have modern philosophies of education, which is the text of the bill, but rather what are the innovations going on today in private and home schooling that you should be looking at. Instead, we've got an Educational Innovation Committee that is, in effect, trying to stifle innovation in private schools and home schools. It's astonishing to me.
Thank you very much.
For the record, Kevin Sturett, Home Education Liberty Project, one sentence. I'm going to do this. As unpopular as it's going to be, our belief on both of these bills is that it's turning over more power and more jurisdiction to people who have failed tremendously in their own responsibilities. I'm going to leave this report that the Department of Education provided on abuse in public schools. There's other documentation. Our feeling is it's the public schools and the public school teachers who need more regulation and not us. A lot of commas, one sentence. Thank you.
Thank you for your perspective, and I would look forward to reading the report.
Lori Simpson, Madam Chair, I appreciate your opening remarks, what you said about when that there's many, many people who are very well qualified to teach children things that they need to know. And this bill, 2996, would absolutely limit that. It would cut off, I would say, most of the influence that my children have and many other of the people's children in this room. I really appreciate everything that has been said. I feel like it's a very, very well-focused presentation so far. We are new to this state, and I am rather appalled at what I see so far in these two bills in particular as the power grab that is going on by the teachers' union. It seems to be the elephant in the room that no one is talking about, but I truly believe that the ATM that they represent to anyone who votes for these bills is not going to be as big an influence in the futures of the people who have say in this as will be the votes of the people who are against it.
Thank you. Thank
I
you
also
for
oppose
coming.
2979.
Okay. I really do appreciate you coming. I appreciate it. Our next three witnesses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Larry Hall, Brian Dutton, and Brad Gray. The next three after them are Audrey Engel, Virginia Reiki, and Amy Grant.
You're all being wonderful.
My name is Larry Hall. I'm a 71-year-old homeschool granddad. And
welcome, Mr. Hall.
Thank you. I don't have any of the really good facts that these other folks have already presented. I've got more anecdotal stuff. I felt really...
Then give us just two sentences then.
Okay. I'm very concerned that this is going to be throwing more roadblocks in us homeschool families' way. It's going to tend to throttle the homeschool movement. It, like Senator Starr said, I think it would be a step backward, and we would wonder what's next. Is this another step down a slippery slope to just total state control? And I object to big brotherism in the state. I think that the families are most responsible, are the ones that are most responsible for their education of their children, and I don't think the state needs to do it. And as these other witnesses have already said, the homeschool families are really doing a much better job, and there's problems in the public schools. And my own, one of my sons and one of his sons have had problems with the public schools, and that was part of the reason that he went to Salem Academy at the time, and now he is homeschooling his children.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hall. Thank you for being a great granddad.
My name is Brian Dutton. I'm a father of seven children. We're currently homeschooling five of those who are of school age. I would echo the sentiments and comments that have been made so far by people who are much more learned than me. I came down today because I'm concerned that what appears to be happening here is a group of people who are statistically doing a better job at educating their children are having more hurdles thrown in their way. And I would oppose that. I want to go on record as opposing both of the bills that are HB 2996 and 2979.
Thank you.
I opposed both bills.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Madam Chair and the committee, I am Brad Gray. I am the father of two special needs children, of which we are homeschooling one of those, and the other one is in Providence Child Care Center. Thus also being brought under, I believe, a homeschool-type atmosphere there. My wife and I have spent more time with these children than anybody else. We believe we're better suited to decide what is best for their education. We know their strengths. We know their weaknesses. We're able to develop those. And if you're all familiar with an IEP,
yes.
We have gone to battle, so to speak, a number of times in IEP meetings where there's two parents and everybody else on the other side, which would comprise of maybe seven other people. And to cut to the chase, one of the licensed educators in that meeting one time made the point of, quote unquote, what is the point? And that was speaking of educating my child. Licensing teachers does not guarantee the quality of education. I want to go on record of opposing both HB 2979 and HB 2996. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Audrey Engel, Virginia Rake, and Amy Grant. Those are the last three signed up for 2979. So I'll give the first three for 2996 ready, which is Lark Palma, Ken Townsend, and Richard Cross, the next panel, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Which one's first?
Ms. Engel.
Okay. For the record, my name is Audrey Engel. I'm from Salem. I work for Representative Thatcher as an intern, but I'm here for my family because of our concerns, and I oppose both bills. I oppose 2979 because of the increased burden on homeschool students. We do not believe that these requirements are necessary or effective. My written testimony will provide more information on that. We also oppose 2996 because of the requirement to have a teacher's license. We do not believe a teacher's license provides any extra expertise than a person would already have. It's an unnecessary requirement, and we're afraid of how it would affect people like my father, who teaches a debate class for a small fee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Engel.
Thank you. My name is Virginia Rake, and I'm the home teaching parent of three children, ages 9, 10, and 11.
God bless you.
I am in strong opposition to both bills, especially 2979. I spent a long time last night writing this, but I only have a minute. So, forcing home educating families to adhere to standardized course of study, contrary to what was spoken earlier, would dictate the choice of curriculum, because we would have to teach in a way that would make them able to stay on par with public school students. And so that would affect the curriculum choices that we have. With yearly goals tied to staying on par with publicly schooled students, this would rob us of the flexibility that is so fundamental to home teaching. Home-taught students often go about learning in ways that fit perfectly in a home and family situation, but would not necessarily work in a classroom. And I would submit the opposite way would be just as sensible. Classroom methods don't always work at home. And on the other bill, I had not planned on speaking, but I will, if I may, just for a moment. All three of my children are involved in various music lessons and outside classes. All of them are taught by people who are professionals in what they do, but not certified teachers. And so that provision of the bill is extremely broad and frightening to me, because I would hate to see homeschoolers lose those resources that make our homeschool environment so rich. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amy Grant. I'm the legislative liaison with the Oregon Home Education Network. I'm sorry that I don't have more time to answer the questions about children falling through the cracks, but I wanted to address that. I agree that there are children that fall through the cracks in every situation. There are parents that are mentally ill or have chemical dependencies in every part of this society. There are legislators that have mental illness and chemical addiction. Mm-hmm. It is a problem. Trying to address it with a homeschooling bill is saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I would suggest, in fact, the data that the state provides is that more reports of child abuse and child neglect are made by community members, medical professionals, law enforcement professionals, than by education professionals. 83% of reports of child abuse and child neglect come from community and professional sources other than educators. And those reports are substantiated at a higher rate than those that come from educators. If you really want to help the children that are falling through the cracks, get them medical insurance. That's all I have to say. Thank you. And one more thing. Amen. Position healed thyself before you attach the leeches to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Grant.
Lark Palma, Ken Townsend, Richard Cross, Madam Chair, that we have no more people signed up to testify on 2979. We have approximately 15 people signed up on 2996, including this panel. Remaining who have not already testified.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Lark Palma. I'm the head of the Portland's Catlin Gable School, a preschool through 12th grade private school founded in 1859. I speak in opposition to House Bill 2996 as a private school graduate, as an educator in private schools for 30 years. I hold a master's degree in education and a doctorate in English literature. I have been, but I am currently not now, licensed. I have the credentials to speak for all private schools in our state because I am a former commissioner for private schools for the Northwest Association of Accredited Schools, as well as the Oregon Advisory Committee for NAAS, a 10-year officer in the Pacific Northwest Association of Independent Schools, and I have just been appointed to the Private Pre-K through 12 Advisory Committee for the State Department of Education. I speak on behalf of all of my colleagues in Oregon in the Christian, Adventist, Catholic, Episcopal, Jewish, and secular private schools. Most, if not all, of the segment that I represent are registered with the state and do criminal background checks on everyone who works at our schools. And I have six reasons why I believe that this is an unnecessary bill.
I'm going to ask you to say one of them.
Just one?
I'm serious. Yeah, we have at least seven, eight more.
Okay, well, our schools are rigorously regulated. The core standards for accreditation by NAAS and others are putting us at the highest level of accountability and standards possible. And if you would like me to leave any of these accrediting core standard books from NAIS, the Catholic schools, PNAIS, or the core standards of NAAS, I'd be very happy to leave them so you could see at what a high level we regulate ourselves and make sure that our children are safe and well-educated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Palma. Is it Doctor?
Yes.
Dr. Palma, and I really appreciate you bringing the materials because people frequently think there's only one way that we, only one group of requirements. But accreditation is a whole nother level. We don't even talk about, well, we talk about the federal government and the state, but we don't even talk about what it is to get your school accredited. So I really appreciate you bringing those additional materials because it's just another big piece of regulation.
May I make one sentence on the accreditation of teachers? Certification. I don't believe that accreditation, certification makes for an excellent teacher. We have a mix of both, and some of the, it just doesn't equate to great teaching or people who are really safe with children. So
yeah.
I think that's one of the most dangerous parts of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. I just hope everybody would recognize that we'd like to have a lot more discussion on a numerous comments that are being made.
Mr. Townsend.
Dr. Ken Townsend, I'm the Associate Regional Director for the Northwest with the Association of Christian Schools International, which is an organization in 105 countries. Specifically, I want to speak on behalf of the 93 Oregon schools in opposition to 2996. I do so as a person who holds a doctorate. I'm certified through the superintendent level in both the public school in the state of Idaho and California, and also with the Association of Christian Schools International. So I'm not opposed to certification. We do tell all our schools to do background checks. We are an accrediting body that has reciprocity with the Northwest Association of Accredited Schools. And my one sentence would be I've administrated a school that was 80% minority, and we were in the 90th percentile on the standardized achievement test scores. And that was with teachers that were not certified. So I don't think that this is addressing the issue. In fact, Representative Holvey's motivation behind this is great heart, but there is no connection at all between the illustration that he gave and the groups that are here today speaking in opposition to this. So he's trying to legislate the wrong groups.
Thank you, sir.
Next speaker is Mr. Cross, and if Joe Morgan, Art Crino, and Kathy Fleener could be prepared to testify next. Mr. Cross?
Hi, my name is Richard Cross from Salem, Oregon, bookandpen.com, and I'm a born-again Christian. There are two fundamental issues I'll address in the one sentence. One is we hear a lot of arguing back and forth in that discussion about percentiles in the state, homeschooling, private school. I would simply say, where does the state get the authority to be set up as the benchmark? Who gave the state the parental rights? God gives parental rights. The state has no right to usurp that in any case, and you cannot make a law to do that. Therefore, parental rights reside with the parent, and their freedom of conscience is what dictates, not law. And if you make a law to take away that freedom, as you remember, there was a government that was dissolved so that we could have this government, and it's because a certain king took away those rights. We need those rights, and you have no right to take them away.
Thank you, sir.
Can I just say something?
Yes, ma'am.
I have to step out because I have to go to another meeting, but I have had the opportunity. We've had three children, and they're all adults, but I've had them in private school. I've had them in public school, private school, and actually homeschooled for one quarter when my daughter had to leave a private school right at the last quarter of her eighth grade year. I think it had more to do age than academics, but I'm happy to say she's going to graduate from college in just a couple of months here. And the point I'd like to make is I think we need to make sure, Madam Chair, that we give parents in this state different tools to apply to educating their children. And I appreciated the flexibility when I raised my kids that whatever state they were in, I was able to apply to the best tool available that would help them through their academic process. And so as we move forward, if we do at all on these bills, we need to proceed with much caution, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Minnis.
Thank you.
Joe Morgan, Art Crino, and Kathy Fleener, and just for the record, Dr. Palmer, we have your written testimony, which we'll distribute to the members as well.
Please begin. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Art Crino from Tigard, Oregon. I'm a retired engineer. I'm against both of these bills. I spent my career in corporate management, and one of the rules, simplistic as it may sound, was lead, follow, or get out of the way. And as the lady said earlier, let's get out of the way. Thank you.
Thank you. It's one of my favorite quotes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Fleener. I am the Assistant Division Head at the French American International School in Portland, Oregon. I have been a certified teacher in the state of Oregon for 27 years. I have the incredible opportunity to work with certified teachers from all over the world. As a language immersion school, we recruit faculty and employ native speakers from many countries. Our teachers are highly trained and have been certified in their countries. This bill would stifle our ability to welcome these wonderful educators to Oregon.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, distinguished representatives, I am Joe Morgan. I'm the administrator at North Clackamas Christian School in Oregon City. I prepared to teach in public schools. I am certified to teach in the state of Alaska. However, all of my teaching time has been in private schools for almost 30 years. One sentence.
Regretfully, yes.
I wish I could recall Victor Borga's punctuation. Private schools are a market-driven entity. Do poorly, parents vote with their feet. Semicolon. Neither registration nor teacher licensure or certification ensure a high-quality education.
Thank you.
Explanation point.
Donation.
I think it was an explanation
point. Overtime.
No.
Mary Folberg, Ben Jaquith, Scott Sprout, the next panel, and the next three, if they could be ready, are David Gore, Gil Plubel, and Matt Dow.
Adam,
yes, sir.
We have I know we have some people that traveled a long way on the second bill. And I find myself in support of tabling these two bills. But I really want to hear that third bill, and I'm afraid that we're tightening up so tight on them, those people will not have a chance.
Okay. Just one moment. We'll count, Representative Dolan.
Thank you very much.
Wow. We have 10 more people that are signed up. If there would be anybody, I feel like I'm at an airport mic saying if there would anybody be willing to wait, or not, either to wait till another day or, you know, if we could, if you give your space to somebody else. Without going any further, what do you think, Representative Dahl? We will get to 3010.
I think we have some people that came from a long ways away.
I know we do. That's why I promised we're going to get there.
Madam Chair,
yes.
You have my sympathy.
Okay, thank you.
We'll talk very, very quickly. My name is Mary Folberg. I've been in public education for 30 years and 12 years in independent education. I founded the Jefferson Dance Program. I was its department chair for 28 years. I founded the Northwest Academy, and I'm currently the head of school there. I've personally held credentials in both California and Oregon. I oppose House Bill 2996. I don't object to the criminal background checks. We've done this since our inception. We register with the state. But certification requirement of this bill would close our school because it would arbitrarily rob us of some of our very best staff. Please remember, independent schools are market driven. If we are not excellent, we don't have enrollment. We must be very, very nimble in our hiring, and we always go for excellence. In over 40 years of working with both certified and non-certified staff, I have never, ever seen a correlation between excellent teaching and having a state teaching certificate.
Okay. The concluding sentence.
Okay. One thing that wasn't touched on is in our program, for example, at the upper level of the high school, we need to be hiring teachers that have great in-depth subject matter knowledge, and we hire out of the ranks of college-level instructors, and that prepares our students at the upper level for college, for doing college-level work. We would have to, they are not going to get a certificate. So that was a point that wasn't touched.
Thank you
very much for hearing us.
My name is Dr. Ben Jaquith, pastor of Westgate Baptist Church, founder of Westgate Christian School, over 200 students in our school, having an association in the Northwest with about 1,000 schools nationwide. And to ask a preacher to do anything in one sentence will take a miracle. But I'll do my best simply by saying that as I looked at our own staff qualifications, and started thinking, going through this process of certification, we've got one of our teachers in chemistry and physics with a Bachelor of Science in Aerospace Engineering, was graduated ninth in his class from the U.S. Naval Academy, exchange student with Air Force Academy, and the list goes on. And his credentials to ask him to go back and get certified and become a slap in the face to all he's been through already. But I would say that the primary reason I'm opposed to both of these bills is that, again, the United States Supreme Court reaffirmed what we know biblically, that the children are the responsibility of the parents. And the 14th Amendment made provision for that liberty. And I would urge a no pass from this committee on these two bills.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. My name is Scott Sprout. I'm the principal of Westgate Christian School in Tigard, and my wife and I have seven children. I'm opposed to both of these bills also for much of what's already been said. I'd just like to say that the academic record of our school, as many other like-minded Christian schools in our state, proves that our kids are learning, and they're learning well, and also our products, the students that we're putting out, are good people. We have graduates from Michigan to Mexico and all different parts of the United States. They're good people. They're serving the Lord. They're serving our country. To my knowledge, we don't have one graduate that is on drugs, on the welfare rolls, or in jail. And we are proud of that. And there's something more important than a piece of paper that says we can teach, and that is a heart for the kids. And people that love kids will have more impact on them. Our, as Pastor said, our folks are well qualified academically. But none of our teachers are there to get rich. They're there because they want to be and because they love the kids. That will have a tremendous impact on them for eternity, for our country. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question for the committee. Would you be willing to come back here and listen to the testimony of the last six people at 5 o'clock?
Yes, I would.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll try. I think I have another committee, but I'll see.
Okay. Representative Wisnett?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Listen.
We do have six other people, but I am committed to doing House Bill 3010. And so if you can stay until 5 o'clock, we'll come back. And we'll listen as long as you want to share your thoughts. With that, go ahead.
Just for the record, also, anyone who cannot stay and wishes to hand in written testimony can do so with the committee assistant in hearing room D, and that will be entered into the official record.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2979 and House Bill 2996, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3010. Mr. Olson, if you'll help us out with a brief summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3010 creates the Freedom to Choose My School grant program. It directs the Department of Education to select large school districts to administer the grant program. It allows the eligible students to attend public or private school under the program. It directs district to pay grant funds to a school participating in the program, specifies the amount of grant, adds weighting to state school fund formula for students who participate in the program, and applies to the 2008-2009 school year. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee and then the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Madam Chair, I believe we have a panel of requesters of the bill, Mr. Matt Wingard, Jomo Greenridge, and Marcus Mundy.
We don't have Marcus here, so Esther Henson will be coming up.
Okay. Here. Thank you so much for your time and patience.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, first of all, we want to thank you very much for the opportunity to present this bill, which is the product of 2 years' worth of work with members of the minority community in Portland. A number of them are here today. I hope we do get a chance for you to hear from all of them, so I'm going to keep my remarks as brief as possible, but I do want to just address a few issues. I have turned in a copy of my testimony and some letters for some folks who couldn't be here today but wanted to make sure that they were heard on this bill, and then a copy of the report that we put out a year ago when we began meeting monthly with minority parents and community activists in, first of all, I should introduce myself. My name is Matt Wingard.
Thank you.
I am the director of the School Choice Project for Cascade Policy Institute, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan policy research center based in Portland. Cascade works to advance individual liberty, economic opportunity, and personal responsibility. Now that I've done the part that I get paid to say. We began having a monthly meeting in the community to talk about the educational situation in North Portland and Northeast Portland. And in the course of some of the early meetings, it became clear that people in the room had a lot of history, and they had a lot of stories to tell, and they knew a lot about what had been going on over the last 30 years in the community and different attempts to reform the public system. But there was nothing brought together. There was no resource. It had not been put together in a manner, in a report where everyone could access it. So the first thing we set out to do was to put out this report, which is on our website and has been widely distributed in the community in Portland. Many folks have read it, and it's a 14-page report that essentially details, it starts from the point at which another report on the Jefferson Cluster was put out in the mid-70s, indicating at that time that there were unacceptably high dropout rates and unacceptably high failure to read rates and unacceptably high failure to be able to do math at grade level rates, and that something needed to be done. And what the report details is that over the course of 30 years, a lot of things were done, but it didn't make much difference in the dropout rates, in the failure to read rates, and in the failure to do math at grade level rates. So I would encourage everyone in the committee to read the report, members of the public who are watching. Again, it can be accessed on our website. Some of the figures are in there, so I won't go over those. But once members of the community and our group had read the report, and it reflected their memory of what had gone on and the level of the dropout rate, which hovers around 50% in the area, the question began, where do we go from here? So I'd just like to make a couple points, and then I'll conclude. One is that, and again, I hope nobody takes this the wrong way on the committee, and we're very, very grateful for the hearing today, Representative Kumm. But we just spent the last hour and a half talking about what might be a very tiny problem, if it is a problem in this state, and that is whether or not people homeschooling are doing a good job and whether or not private schools are doing a good job. And we're going to spend a much shorter period of time talking about an extremely serious and large problem. You're talking about a community where upwards of half of the folks are not graduating from high school. Now, I asked Matt Evans, who did this research project at the time, over the last 30 years, based on the attendance rates at Jefferson, what would you estimate are the number of children who are now adults who went through the system and either dropped out or left without actually being able to read and do math at the grade level that their diploma would have indicated that they could? His estimate was 7,000 to 8,000 people. Those people don't just disappear. You see them in the unemployment lines and in the welfare lines and everywhere else when we fail to deliver an education that people really need and that they do want. I'll end by saying that House Bill 3010 is a pilot project designed to answer the question, do low-income parents want to take control of their child's education? And do they want access to school choices outside of what they are being offered today? If the current system is meeting their needs, they will not sign up for this program. If they do sign up, then as policymakers, we must ask ourselves why, and the publicly funded education system must respond to their needs. After all, low-income parents have the most limited choices in today's education system. They cannot afford private school, even if they desire it, and they cannot afford to move into the neighborhoods with the best-performing public schools. Being low-income should not limit your child's educational choices. One could argue that low-income parents are precisely the people who need the most varied educational choices for their children. I've attached a fact sheet about 3010 that highlights the major aspects of the project. I hope you will give this program serious consideration and place the needs and desires of parents and students ahead of those expressed by the adults running the public education system. I hope that we can all agree that no one should be forced to attend a school that isn't meeting their needs just because they can't afford another option. House Bill 3010 is a starting point for a discussion about how to give low-income parents in Portland more control over their child's future. We stand ready to work with any legislator to craft a better pilot program and move this vital, it's affecting people every day, this vital piece of legislation forward. And I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Esther Henson, and I'm here today to support HB Bill 3010. Being an educator over the years, from first grade right through to high school and now at junior college with general ed, I think it's time to break the cycle. And I think school choice is the way to go. And I just want to be supportive of that.
Thank you.
My name is Joma Greenidge. I'm here to support House Bill 3010. I'm a social entrepreneur in Portland, also an educator. Students I work with do go to that Jefferson High School, the majority of them. I'm about 3 or 4 blocks away. You know, when you go to rent an apartment building, you can ask the people that run the apartment building, is this place good? But who you really want to ask are the tenants. And when you ask those kids, where do you go to school, Jeff? Is it good? And they say, it's horrible. And I say, why do you go? Because that's where we go. That's life. If you live here, you go to Jeff. Now, there's parents that have more economic means, and they choose, for many of the same reasons, the last hour and 45 minutes, whatever, to provide opportunities for their kids. But there's some parents and some kids that opportunity is not there for them. And sometimes for us as educators, we have to look at ourselves and say, maybe we're not the best solution for the kids that we're dealing with. So House Bill 3010, to me, for some kids, it provides the opportunity for some kids to thrive in an environment that would suit them. For parents, like Matt said, it provides opportunity for choice. But for us as a state, for educators that work within the state system, for many of the legislative government that we've elected, and specifically the subcommittee, it provides an opportunity, in my opinion, for integrity. Because the integrity that comes across, without this bill and bills like it, you take a position of arrogance that says, we are the best at what we do, and what we do will serve all of our kids. And if the best we can do does not serve our kids, then we should provide an opportunity for them to go to somebody that can. That's what this bill does. It provides an opportunity for kids to be in a place where they should go. When I was 14, I loved math and science. It's all I could do. And I scored high enough on the SAT to be awarded membership in the men's organization. I had scholarships all across the country. I never got to participate in those because I had a 1.2 grade point average, despite the fact that on my own time, I was teaching math, college-level math, discrete mathematics, dynamic programming, exploratory data analysis, to junior high kids to show them that they could do it. My problem was not that I wasn't smart or that I didn't love to learn. My problem was my school was a bad fit for me. And I did not graduate and not go to college for 7 more years because I hated school when I was a kid. Now, my situation is not unique. I can tell you about a young person that I work with now who's known on the street as Tizzy. And in his own time, he writes computer games. He programs in an action script. Guys that program in action script make $30, $40 an hour. And he does it on his own time for free with little documentation, quite casually. This kid has a 1.2 grade point average and did not graduate with his class at Jefferson. And it's not because he's not talented, and it's not because he doesn't love to learn, because he'll put the time into work and learn when it's relevant to him. The problem is his school is a bad fit for him. Please provide an opportunity for kids to get the opportunity to go to a school that's a good fit for them. That's what this bill does. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for mentoring other people, too.
You're welcome.
Catherine Hickok and Abel Araya.
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Catherine Hickok, and I'm director of the Children's Scholarship Fund Portland. I'll be very brief. I've provided my full testimony and some letters from our scholarship students for you. We provide privately funded partial tuition scholarships to families whose incomes are low to moderate. 29% of our families currently in the program would benefit from HB 3010. And I'd just like to make this one point, and that's that low-income families care about their children very, very much, and they will make any sacrifice they can to choose the best environment for their children. And they are making huge financial sacrifices in our program. Many of them have many children in school at the same time. Our scholarships average about $1,500, which is not a lot of money, but that makes the difference between their children being in a public school that they do not like for whatever reason, that's not a good fit for them, or being in a school where they are actually thriving. And one young lady stayed up half the night last night to send me this letter where she said, "You have shown me that money shouldn't hold anyone back from being successful in life. What you have given me is so much more than money. You have given me opportunity, confidence, faith, and trust that life has meaning and that I am meant to succeed no matter what obstacles come in my way. I encourage you to continue to give that same opportunity and confidence to others in my situation." She's in college and doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name is Abelaria, and I'm a recipient of the Children's Scholarship Fund money or whatever. Growing up, my parents have always wanted me to get a good education and be successful in life. The Children's Scholarship Fund has put me in an atmosphere where that is possible. Port Newton is an outstanding school with intelligent teachers who will do almost anything to see you succeed, and it is with their aid that I am able to attend such a school. Port Newton has a good Christian atmosphere and has helped me expand my knowledge about God. I am very grateful for all the knowledge I have gained, all the accomplishments I have attained, and all the opportunity to expand my talents and all the friendships that I have developed there. Port Newton has opened my eyes in so many different ways. I was introduced to sports, where I learned leadership, teamwork, and competitiveness. I experienced the difficulties of being a student-athlete, but learned to manage my time and developed good study habits. Sports played a big part of my life. I became a five-sport athlete, participating in sports such as soccer, cross-country, basketball, track and field, and baseball. I discovered that I was a talented athlete and became a top competitor. I would never have found these opportunities if I were anywhere else, because I was taught to try new things, find my niche, and not to limit myself, but rather go out and experience all things. I plan to graduate in 2 years and attend college. I have grown to love sports and have plans to compete at the college level. With the exclusive nurture I receive at Port Lutheran, these plans are within reach. I will continue to succeed academically and athletically and carry on that same drive through college and the rest of my life. The Children's Scholarship Fund has put me in an opportunity to better myself. They have given me the opportunity to be at a school that gives me all the tools I need to succeed in life. I know that because of the Children's Scholarship Fund, I'm a better person, a better student, a better athlete, and a better leader. I hope they understand how much they've impacted my life. They have given my family a sense of relief and have provided me with a better education and the confidence that I will succeed. And I hope they continue to give me the opportunity to go on with my journey to success. Thank you.
Thank you. Well said.
Hugo Schultz, Smith Williams, and Renee Kimball, please.
Is that it?
And then we have three others, Pastor Woods, Maura Cioda, and Tony Stacy, if they could please be prepared to testify next.
And so because we have six people in 5 minutes, we're going to stick to the one sentence proposal here. I'm sorry. We have a full committee waiting to take our chairs.
Okay, I'll be brief. My name is Hugo Schultz. I have a bachelor's in education and a master's in business administration, but my main concern is just the appalling statistics that you are probably familiar with. And we know that where parents have a choice to opt out of public schools, those schools are of higher quality than low-income neighborhoods. That's kind of like your... When you run for election and you're unopposed, you don't have to make much of an effort, but if you have a strong challenger, then you do. So do we really want to give equal treatment and opportunity under the law, or just give lip service to it? Do we really want to provide for diversity of schools so that parents have the choice to give their children a culturally relevant education? I hope your answer is yes to these questions, and that you and the Oregon tradition of initiating leading-edge solutions will accommodate diversity by supporting HB 3010.
Thank you.
My name is Smith Williams. I'm a concerned parent and husband and father of five kids. I've kind of got into this thing because of my wife and I. We both homeschooled. We had our kids in private school, and we had our kids in public school. The reason we did all of that is because of the choices that we didn't have in a public school. And so we were denied choice in public school. We homeschooled, and we private schooled. All my kids graduated from high school. They're all doing well. I have four in college, and I've got another one graduating this year. So we've had that commitment to our kids. But just in summary, we had a candidate run for the governorship, and he was allowed to actually get a apartment in a school district where he wanted his kid to go. There's nothing wrong with that, but he was able to move his kid. And I think that illustrates the point that if you have means and you have resources and you have money, you can do things that other people cannot do. So what this bill does is it allows people that do not have those kind of resources to look at the glasses half full and not half empty. I think if you just go to one model and one system and it's half empty, you're not really giving other people the opportunity to have some choices. This would have been good for me as a father. Without the finances, we went through a lot of things to get that handled. But this would have given us a lot of opportunity. We may have stayed in the public school system had we allowed to have choice and to move out of a school district that wasn't meeting our needs and maybe go to another public school system.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Renee Kimball, and my husband and I are childless by choice, but we have made it quite a very high priority in what we see as the future for all of us sitting in this room. So it is one thing that we spend a lot of time on. My one sentence about Measure 3010 is that are we such a small, tiny-minded state that we are afraid to try a pilot project with 1,000 kids that may work out to save 1,000 lives? Are we that tiny that we won't do this?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, how many more? Okay. We have three more people plus Representative Crummell. Representative Crummell, if you...
Take those three, please.
Okay, well, that means you probably won't get to speak today.
Oh, we hear Representative Crummell all the time.
Okay, well, we'll get you another day for sure.
Pastor Woods, Mara Ciota, and Tony Stacy.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. I'm Pastor Woods, and I'll make it brief. I'm a senior pastor, but also my background is in with parole probation with adjudicated youth dealing with dual diagnosis and drug and alcohol mental health. And my experience has been for the past 18 years and dealing with those youth, they were all low academically. And what I find is if you're low academically, it's going to be an increase in pregnancy, crime, violence, drugs, homelessness. Is it fair, because I come from a low-income family, that I can't receive quality education? If they had an option, an opportunity to receive quality education, it gives them choices and they end up in the system in which I've been dealing with.
Thank you.
My name is Mara Ciota, and I'm a product of public and private education, and I work in the nonprofit field. I run programs for low-income youth in this community where this bill would affect, as well as all around. And I'm here. I'm a nice Irish Catholic Democrat. I think it's a bipartisan kind of bill. I really thought this was a more Republican thing when I first got into this. It's not. Choice is about making sure that everybody has an equal choice and having the best education they can. And I have the means. We sacrificed to send our kids to private school. Not everyone has that same choice. Competition isn't bad. I got a lot of union members in my family, and I support this bill, and it's very scary to be here. This is politically, it's very scary to support choice. I work with all Portland public schools. I believe that, whatever choice works for someone matters, but we should have more choices. Competition's good. As Darwin said, it's the survival of the fittest. The best ones will win, public or private. So I believe very strongly that everyone has a right to have a choice, and I want all our kids to get the best education they can. The kids I see have a lot of parents who weren't very well educated, don't know how to make choices, and we help them make choices within public and private and help get scholarships. So I really, really support this bill.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and distinguished panel. My name is Tony Stacy. I'm a resident and businessman in professional and amateur sports here in Oregon in support of HB 3010. I'm here today to ask that this panel of legislators to consider HB 3010, brought to you by the Cascade Policy Institute. You've heard a lot of testimony and read reports about HB 3010 and how it relates to our educational efforts for children, particularly in North and Northeast Portland. However, the ramifications are far-reaching. This bill, HB 3010, sends a signal that our state legislators are looking, acting, and have a general concern for all educational efforts. Other states will see this as a stepping stone for their own constituents. Madam Chair and distinguished panel, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Because I have close ties with the committee chair for the next meeting, Representative Roblin, he said that he will start his committee late to hear the last two people testify.
Damon Miller and Representative Crummell.
Thank you. My name is Damon Miller. I'm here to support 3010. I am a product of Portland Public Schools. I did graduate, but I watched more than 60% of my fellow minority African American males not graduate, walk across the stage with empty diplomas, and then when they come to us later, as I work for a nonprofit and we provide services, a lot of them are unable to even fill out registration forms. How would a parent that cannot fill out registration forms, that's a product of a failed school system, if they were involved in that, how would their children's be able to fill out something as easy as registration forms? I failed out of school and went into private school to get my high school diploma and came back into high school where I tested into honors level English, social studies, science. From 1 year of my mother having a choice to send me to a private school, I now have a 14-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter who are both entering school. One is entering pre-K, one is entering high school, and I am registering them both in a private school because I'm able to have choice. And I think that other people in my age and my race and in my community should have choice. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Chairman, committee, for the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and Novatogaston. I just wanted to make a very brief comment. I sponsored this bill because I really believe families should have a choice in schools. This is a real opportunity, I think, for us to provide a choice for some students that otherwise would not have that kind of choice just because of their economic station in life at this particular time. That doesn't mean it can't improve. It's a pilot for the Portland Public School System. I really hope that the committee will give a strong support for the bill, and I do hope that you'll take it to work session as soon as possible and move it on. And I do thank you, Chair Comp, for scheduling the bill and hearing it today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we're going to close the public hearing. On House Bill 3010, and then committee will recess until 5 o'clock. And so,
you can close the
committee. I will close the committee hearing for right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Of the hearing of the House Education Innovation Education Subcommittee. Welcome back. I can't share how appreciative and moved I am that you waited to come back to share your words of wisdom with us. We have 1, 2, 7 people that had signed up that have not had a chance to speak, and we have an incredible committee here waiting to hear your words. And I have to honor Representative Roblin. He's been in this room since 1 o'clock.
Yep.
Straight through.
I haven't left yet.
How far have you gone? Down 2 chairs?
Yeah, I just moved back and forth.
And to welcome also a staff member, Dana Richardson, and she normally works with the Senate committee, but welcome to help us out this evening. Okay, so with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2979 and 2996. And if I could have David Gore, Gil Plummel, and Matt Dow, please come forward.
Madam Chair, is that a brief summary, or shall we dive in?
We're going to dive in. Unless any committee member needs to be reminded.
A senior member something about these bills.
Yeah. Thank you. Please identify yourself and which bill you're testifying on.
Chair Comp, members of the committee. My name is David Gore. I'm the founder of Ashbrook Independent School in Corvallis, Oregon. And I'm here to testify against House Bill 2996. I have no wish to repeat the testimony that's already been made. I had a lot of good ideas, and a lot of them have been covered here already. So my testimony is going to be brief. Oregon teachers should not be required to have state teaching certificates to teach children in private schools. And some of the reasons have been mentioned for that, but one I would like to add to the previous testimony, and that is that in our school, Ashbrook Independent School in Corvallis, we teach Chinese language classes, and we have always have had difficulty finding teachers to teach that. And if we had to find somebody who was certified, in addition to being qualified, we just couldn't teach it, and our students would have a poor program as a result. And this is Chinese, but there are other things. You know, there are specialty subjects that, such as dance, or karate, or maybe Arabic, that there just aren't people who have been trained, certified teachers to teach these things. So that if we wanted to teach dance, for example, under this law, we wouldn't be able to find anybody. We'd go to our PE teacher and say, can you teach this? And she'd say, no, I was trained to teach team sports, because that's what they're teaching these days in teachers' colleges. And I could say, oh, but we have small classes. We can do dance much better. And she'd say, I'm sorry, I wasn't trained for that. So the range of subjects that we could teach would and the amount of innovation that we could practice in our school would be much reduced if this bill were to pass, and the students would suffer. There's really no crisis in private school education. Private schools already have every reason to hire the most qualified teachers they can find, and so I ask that you reject the bill and preserve a wide variety of educational options for our children. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. Appreciate it. Is Gil Plummel available? Okay. Matt Dow? Lori Walker? And then Rick Adams?
Madam Chairperson, thank you for your time. Thank you, committee members. My name is Lori Walker, and I'm the founder of Village Home Education Resource Center. I'm here specifically to talk about 2996, but I'm also opposed to the other one because I actually wear several hats. I'm a homeschooling parent, and I started Village Home Education Resource Center to offer classes and field trips for families who home educate. We're located in Beaverton. We serve about 200 kids at the moment, and we have over 50 classes a week. I'm passing around for you, for your records, some little bios on some of our teachers. You've heard anecdotes today, and you've heard different private institutions coming up saying, we would close because we hire some teachers that are not certified. We're in the same boat. Our classes are all, we're an educational marketplace. All of our teachers are part-time, and they all are hired according to their passions. So we have a robotics class that's taught by a computer engineer, and he takes time off of his work schedule to come and teach for us. And he obviously is not certified, would not have any interest in being certified. And interestingly enough, that robotics teacher sent our team of kids all the way to state in robotics, and they competed at the state level. They were down here in Salem visiting with some of you all just last week or a couple of weeks ago as one of the top teams in the state. And that would not have been possible. We have a teacher who taught for 37 years at the LA Zoo School, one of the top charters in the country. He's a retired school teacher, and now he's teaching science at Village Home. And he would not be qualified to teach Chimera Project, which is a DNA sequencing course for our students. And the list goes on and on and on. These are incredibly qualified people, and they do an excellent job teaching, and they aren't certified, and they aren't interested in being certified. So I think that one point that didn't come up is that I consider Village Home, you're the innovation committee, and I consider Village Home to be an incredibly innovative model for education, something that is really different than what's out there right now. And it occurred to me that had a bill like this been passed, say, 4 years ago, a place like Village Home would not be in existence. And I think that in a lot of ways we represent the cutting edge of innovation in education. And I'd be, invite you all to take a look at it. And you're welcome to come visit, and I'd love to talk to you about it, because what we do is very different, and we do it in a different kind of a way. And by restricting restrictive legislation like this limits innovation in education. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Could I ask one question?
Oh, yes, Representative.
Thank you so much. You wear the different hats. I thought maybe you suggested to answer this. The concern about, after all the testimony, very clear that this is a very small percentage of children we're talking about. The concern of a child falling through the cracks, given the testing setup that we have right now, what would you recommend in terms of how an ESD might be able to deal with that situation? Would something like an individual education plan review with ESD work in that situation? This kid's obviously not getting mm-hmm. what they need. What step would you take?
Well, I think something like that is in place. If there's a student that isn't performing at that 15% level, then they are tied into an ESD checkpoint right now. So that's kind of what the system is right now. I think that what the concern was, what about those kids that the ESD isn't ever aware of? It's a hard question, because those kids are everywhere. There's kids in the public school system that are falling through the cracks right now. And there's kids in the private schools that are falling through the cracks. So it probably happens in homeschooling just like it does everywhere else. I think that they're most likely to be caught, captured, their problem is being made aware of through things that aren't necessarily educational avenues. It could be, a neighbor. It could be, something like that, I think would be the most likely way that we even become aware of it.
And if I could follow real quick, because the system better than I do. If an ESD is made aware of it and this child is not getting what they need,
right.
What is the next step?
Right. I don't know the details of it, but I think that the bar is about progress. So once you're looped into the ESD system, you have to show measurable progress. And the ESD does recognize that for some kids, progress looks very different, depending on if the child has any special needs or anything like that. And that as long as progress is being made, then you work in partnership with the ESD person that you've been assigned. And move forward. And that's how it is right now.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Is Rick Adams here? I don't think he is. Okay, then Stan Baker and Charles Starr. Mr. Adams. Oh,
no,
Mr.
I'm
Baker.
Stan.
My name is Stan Baker, and I have, for the past 20 years, been the superintendent at Sandy M. Christian School, located in Adair Village. I wear several hats in that I also serve on the national board with the Association of Christian Schools International, and also serve on their accreditation commission. And for the past 12 years, I've served with Northwest Association of Accredited Schools as one of their commissioners, and I've just finished a stint of a four-year term where I was the state chair for the state of Oregon, which represents both public and private schools in accreditation within our state. So that's kind of been my area of expertise. particularly within the private school. I've just completing this year my 40th year in education in a mixture of private and public education, and that is my passion. I would like to speak to my opposition to Bill 2996, and particular to the provisions relating to registration and the requirement that anyone who provides instruction to children within the K-12 framework must hold a teaching license issued by the commission. The registration I feel less strongly about, but I believe the voluntary provisions that have existed have worked well within our state. And I also serve on the Private School Advisory Commission that is appointed by Superintendent Castillo. And from within that group, we review some of the requirements for private schools that would register, and that seems to have worked well. So my position on that is really that it's worked well. It doesn't seem to be broken. Don't know that it needs to be fixed. The issue of the certification, I feel very strongly about, in that one of the things that it involves is within the private school community, there's an opportunity to be innovative and creative and to develop things that are new and try things on a small scale without a lot of the red tape that's involved in a larger school district. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. I'm saying in a positive way, there's a chance to be creative and try things and make innovations. And one of the things that I think is a foundational point that we need to remember is that private schools are not necessarily just supposed to be mere images of the public school. Within our great state, one of the things that's been a foundational point is a variety of choices for parents to be able to look at options and to look at different ways of doing things. And provide that training. And part of that option is in also looking at your staff, because the staff that is hired by that administration helps to fulfill the dream and the mission of that school. So that if they're a Montessori orientation or there's other teaching styles of innovation, they can hire people that are committed to that philosophy. For the faith-based institutions, that allows them to look for qualified candidates that meet that criteria as well. And so I feel very strongly that the hiring of the staff is the formation of the part of the administrative team, and that to remove that position by restricting it only to those who have completed a teacher education program, in a sense, limits some of the creativity that can be produced in that model. It was stated earlier that often the model that's held for approval becomes the model that's used. And I think that, in a sense, whether it's intentional or not, does limit some of the creativity. So I'd like to speak very strongly to the opportunity for that administrator to be able to hire their own staff. For us at San Diego Christian, it reflects some of the things that have already been said. For years, we've been able to use very talented and gifted people from our community that come in and help us with short-term kinds of things. For years, for instance, one of our art teachers was a person who was a professional artist, supported his family with sculptures and paintings and things that he did, but he came in and taught two classes of art and sharing his talent with our students. Did not have teacher certification, but his portfolio as an artist was exceptional. We've had other people in those same things. At the other end of the spectrum, we've had retired scientists who have completed 30 years in chemistry with a PhD, but do not have a teacher license. And they come in and enrich our programs with the depth of their practical experience. So, again, I would speak to both the creative and the gifted, but the upper-end talented people that come with high levels of careers that they're just reaching in early retirement. So I'd speak to that very strongly. The third part that I would like to address has to do with the accountability piece And I know that's a concern for all of us in education across our state. Through the accreditation that I've been involved in, where I've chaired teams in the public school, I've chaired teams in private schools, everybody's concerned about that accountability and how we relate to our stakeholders or our constituents in those areas. And I would like to address that the general tone of private education is that there is a lot of testing, achievement testing. Often our public model is a looking at 3, 5, 8, and 10, but many of our private schools, my school included, test everyone from K through 12 every year on the Stanford Achievement Test, which is a nationally normed test that provides information that we give back to our parents in terms of the progress that their students are making. And so I think that that's one leg of the stool of looking at accountability. The other leg is looking at parental quality control, because private education is a market-driven experience, that as long as families receive the quality of education that they believe they're paying for, they're willing to continue being both a tuition payer and a taxpayer supporting public school. If they do not believe they're getting the quality of what they're paying for, they in turn can walk at any time and enroll their student in a free educational alternative. So that drives the market in terms of constantly keeping quality in front of us. The third leg has to do with accreditation. And I'm very familiar with accreditation because of my experience. In fact, within Northwest Association of Schools, Colleges, and Universities, what it used to be, now it's Accredited Schools, I have served as the chair of the private school division for 7 states in our Northwest region. We are involved in reviewing all the protocols of the various faith-based organizations. We are involved in evaluating their procedures and their peer reviews. And I would have to say that the position of Northwest Association has been that an alternative protocol must meet or exceed that currently used in the public sector. And that has been the stamp of approval that has been given to those organizations. And I would say that from my experience in working with the 7-state region and all of the private schools that work in that region, that often the protocol and the procedure are even more rigorous than what is currently used within the public school. And so I don't mean that as, again, any kind of a negative statement. I'm saying as a positive thing that the accountability piece, that sometimes we wonder if that's happening, is happening in a very rigorous and specific role. And so in that level of accountability, I would urge you to look at this bill and to reject it based on the fact that there is nothing new that's introduced that would enhance education, but only those things that I think would place more roadblocks to the effective education of all of our students. So I thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Appreciate your time and patience. We only had 2 other people that were interested in testifying, and if you could keep it short, I think we'd be happy to hear from you. And that was Ben, and it's Jackworth and Scott Sprout. Are they here? Okay, they must not have decided to stay. Does the committee have any questions, comments? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, Madam Chair, this is a very personal issue for me as an unlicensed teacher at a private school. This bill has a very direct, House Bill 2996 has a very direct bearing on my livelihood and my advocation and my passion. I want to say just a couple of things, and one of them is to honor Representative Holdy, who I think is motivated out of his intention to see that all kids get what they deserve. And also to honor you, Representative Kahn, for hearing this bill, because I think it's been a tremendous education about the importance of homeschooling and private education. I just wanted to say one thing, because we've heard so much, and I wanted to just add a couple of words that touch a little on the school where I teach. We really do see ourselves as a model for innovation. I don't think we have the hubris to think that the lessons that we learn at the Arbor School, where I teach, can be applied directly to the public system. Our population is very different. Our setting is very different. Our resources are different. But we do work with, we have a sister school relationship with a public school in Portland. Their kids come and to our school, and they learn from our fifth graders. Their first graders learn from our fifth graders. Then our first graders go and spend a day with their fifth graders teaching each other, getting taught by their older kids. We have other ways in which we relate to them as well. But I do think that the role of private education is an important part in what it can help instruct us as we look at the public sector. And one of the reasons why I'm so excited and flattered to be on this committee is that, and one of the real obligations I feel on this committee is to help bring some of the experience and some of the understanding that I think the private sector can teach us to help strengthen our public schools. So I really do appreciate you hearing this bill, and of course all the people who have come from so far and stayed so long to express their thoughts about both of these bills.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. Representative Roblin, and then Representative Wisnett.
Okay, and I want to say the same. You know, I especially about Representative Holvey and this bill. I have talked with him over the last couple of years about the issue and the individual problem that spawned this bill. And I too, having been an administrator in the public schools, have found that issue. And I guess the point that I say, and I think it came out here fairly clearly, what happens with people, and I think it is a part of the natural need to take care of people, is that when you find that situation and there isn't any way to go look and see how many more could there be, because there isn't this registration process, it just makes you believe that there's, wow, there could be hundreds, there could be thousands, there could be millions. And so you build up in your head, how big is this problem, because you've found this isolated case. And what we have to do is have faith and believe that we aren't the only ones worrying about all these children, that there are a lot of other people out there that are doing that, and that there are physicians, and there are policemen, and there are social service agencies, and there are other people out there whose purpose it is to also watch out for that. We tend to, I think, at times in the public school system, take on the burden of trying to solve all the problems that society has. And we know we can't, but that doesn't mean that we don't want to try. And I see that in many of the things that we do in public schools. And I see that in our country, in that they keep putting more and more things on public schools to do other than their mission, which was education, because they found that they do solve a lot of those problems. And so we have to remember that there's a number of other safety nets, and we need to look for those. And I hope that as these conversations go on, people will come forward with ideas about how do we solve the problem as opposed to trying to figure out a solution which may not be addressing it at all. And I think some of the testimony pointed out that that's probably true in a lot of this. And having been one of those people in my community that would get myself in trouble at times because I appreciate charter schools and I help those get going, and even though I was a public school principal, I have a number of people who I would call friends in the homeschool community who would do an exceptional job. Mm-hmm. And the hope is that you get enough communication going that those people trust each other, that they do come forward and talk to you about the problems that they know in their own communities, so that you can all work together to solve those problems and do the one thing that I think Representative Holvey was doing here, and that is protect as well as we can all the children in Oregon. I mean, and there wasn't anybody here that didn't speak to that same desire. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Representative Roblin. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with some of the comments that Representative Roblin made, but I did step out. I don't, can you, the chair, because you have the list, did anyone speak in support of the bill?
No, sir.
Okay. Representative Holvey
did, yes.
Representative Holvey indicated that ODE would be here to answer some questions that we had. Does ODE have a position on this, or does...
They did not take a position, but they were here earlier to answer questions, but are not currently here at this time. Representative Dolan.
Yeah, I made some observations today. Finally found somebody that's been in education longer than you.
Yeah. We appreciate you.
We appreciate you very much. I think the point is Representative Hovey raised an issue.
And there's not one among us that does not want to save every child. But I think if I came away from today with one thing in mind, I know that many years ago the homeschoolers, we used homeschool as a solution for some problems for kids that just couldn't survive in the brick-and-mortar school. On one occasion, we sent a student to a private school. That's neither here nor there, but I hope that out of today we could form a partnership. Because the people I saw in front of me today have so much to offer. And I'm going back to that original statement. If we were more partners in tending to the needs of Oregon students, I think we could tend to the needs of a lot more students. I want a healthy competition between the public and the private. In fact, I had occasion when I was at Central Lynn to say, if I came to school one day and 10 of my students were gone, you better know I'd be finding out why. And I think that that still is true. But after today, I do want to reach out, not just to the homeschoolers and the private schoolers, but to the delegation from Portland, and say to them, you're part of the solution too. Come and help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Allen. Representative Buckley, anything?
Madam Chair, just gratitude towards you for your patience and grace in holding this meeting. And I think the only comment I would make is that we've tried with the two subcommittees and the full ed to hear as many ideas as possible in the time that we've been given. And I greatly appreciate your spirit in accomplishing that.
Well, thank you. The one thing I wanted to share before we left, I don't remember which speaker it was, but there's something on the agenda that all of us care about, and that's health care for children. Because when the one speaker said, you know, what we need to get first is good health care for all children, I wanted to shout, yes, that's what we need. Because it takes both those pieces together to really help a society and our families excel. But the only other comment that as we were walking through the process today, because I live in a district where we have a number of homeless people, we don't keep a real good track on those that aren't attending school for a variety of reasons. And then the other thing that I was strategizing in my head, well, how would we know? The question that Representative Holby brought up, well, how would we know if somebody should be in school and they're not? And so that was where I kept coming back to. I mean, would we call the Census Bureau and ask for all the names? I mean, but it's on the community as a whole to, we're the ones that would know and the ones that could take action. So that's really the best way rather than looking for a piece of paper. But wanted to thank the committee, and I learned a lot today, and I hope the people that came to testify did. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2996 and 2979, and hope you guys get a little sunshine yet tonight, committee, and we're going to close the hearing. Thanks.